Hi, I'm Gail.
And hi, I'm Catherine. Welcome to Women Over 70 Age Reimagined, our award-winning weekly podcast. Please visit womenover70.com and consider joining Aging Reimagined Circle, our sustaining membership fund, so we may continue to inspire women to age with curiosity, courage, and creativity. Members enjoy monthly programming and probing discussions on issues that matter to women. So we hope to see you virtually on Zoom.
Nancy Hansen is 84. Her mother died at 100, having started every social action project in Hendersonville, North Carolina, and receiving the Governor's Award for Outstanding Volunteer Service, not once, but three times. And she was Nancy's role model. Picture Nancy, newly graduated from college in Charleston, West Virginia, beginning her career in social services, driving a big black car with a sign on the doors that says, Department of Welfare. For 1.5 years, Nancy worked for the state of West Virginia Department of Welfare as a child welfare worker until their first son, Brian, was born. And he was born on the same day as Michael Jordan. She and her husband, shortly after Brian's birth, she and her husband, Tom, joined the ranks of corporate transients and moved frequently. Everywhere they lived, Nancy called it home for their family and became involved in local organizations. In 1976, the family moved to the Chicago area and Nancy returned to school for a master's degree in social work, again focusing on children and later other organizations such as Boulevard House and Interfaith Council for Homeless. And Nancy also worked for the Certified Public Accountants Association and was executive director for Hinsdale Hospice. Nancy lives in my building, and I was introduced to her by another woman over 70 guest, Ronnie Buckley. Nancy, welcome to Women Over 70 Aging Reimagined. Welcome.
Thank you.
I love it when you say your career as a volunteer. It's clear you have followed your mother's path. So tell us why advocacy is such an important part of your life.
Well, first of all, let me thank you for including me in this series. I feel very honored to be part of a group of such distinguished women who are aging and taking it seriously. I appreciate being here. I look at myself as not being anything. I've not published lots of books. I've not been successful as a businesswoman. So I'm very pleased to be here and be able to tell my story of, a story of that reflects women who grew up in my age group in the 60s. I think I'm very much a product of that period of time where we were a transitional generation and blazing the trail in many ways for women to have the opportunities that they have today. I look at it as being one foot in the past and one foot in blazing, opening up opportunities for women.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes. So go ahead.
The question you asked me. was the whole around advocacy and why that is such an important part of my life. Right. That goes back, I think, to the early days when we were first married and moving around a lot. I became involved with the League of Women Voters, and that organization at that time gave women opportunities that they didn't have in the workplace, responsibilities that they didn't normally have, and it also taught me the skills for advocacy. The pattern was that you studied a particular subject, and it was usually an issue that there was some action needed. It required systemic change in some way. The league was active at the local, state, and national level, so that you studied all of those issues at the various levels, And then you went to work and used various methods of advocacy to try to make changes. And I think that was probably as important a learning as anything that I did in undergraduate or graduate studies. It is a life skill that is used all the time. And I think we all do it in various ways. But I think the league taught me how to be effective and how to really work with others, organize, and ultimately, in many cases, change. Mm-hmm. I'd like to share probably my most memorable advocacy experience was when we were living in North Carolina, and it was in the early 70s, and busing to integrate schools was just beginning. And for 2 years, I testified as the president of the local league in the same hearing with the Grand Dragon of North Carolina. He advocating for resegregation of the schools, and the league taking a stand that integration had to move forward. Others were lots of hearings and at all levels, and I feel very, very privileged that I was able to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. These certainly were part of a lot of other wonderful advocacy opportunities. Tell us a little bit about some more of those.
Well, I think that being a social worker, you advocate all the time. You advocate for your clients, whether it's helping to get them their benefits, whether it's helping to arrange transportation for them, whether it's helping them with the problem with their landlord. I think you're always doing that. And then I think too that part of social work is also advocating for systemic change for those issues and for those systems that have created, in this case, mostly poverty, and have created the issues that our clients are having to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think the biggest successes have happened, or the at least the progress?
The progress, I would say that a couple of things. Although we're not there yet, I do think that we have been able to affect a more inclusive healthcare system. Advocacy, I think, on the age of Obamacare, if you will. We aren't there yet. It is by no means universal healthcare. And there are still people uninsured and unable to get healthcare. I advocated and worked hard in four different states during our moving around for ERA. Mm-hmm. Although we've not made it a constitutional amendment, I think in many, many ways, the things that we were saying and hoping to accomplish with ERA have happened. Certainly, we've drawn a lot of attention to the discrepancy in women's earning power and their compensation. I think there's I can remember in the day when women could not get a credit card.
Yes.
And I think, you know, you look back on all of that, and I think about, again, I graduated from college in 1961, and there weren't very many jobs that were open to women. We just didn't have those kinds of opportunities. We certainly didn't have the opportunities that women have in business, even in academia. There are many, many more women. You look at the enrollments in the colleges of engineering. That's a field that when my husband was in school, there was one woman in the whole college of 1,200 students. Mm-hmm. And now they're close to, well, I think it is probably at least 50%, maybe even more. Law schools are the same. Medicine has opened up. I think these are all pretty amazing kinds of things. I think we aren't there yet, but I think the civil rights movement came a long way, and that's that a lot of us advocated for that in many, many ways. We aren't there yet. We've got a lot of work to do. There's lots of room out there for lots of advocacy, climate change. You name the issue, and we all need to be out there advocating for it.
That's true. It seems like social activism, or being a social worker as you have been, that must have helped you with all the different moves that you made while your husband was transitioning from job to job in different cities.
Well, it was. And I think I'll go back and give the league another plug, because I think that was always one of the first calls that I made. When men back in the 60s and 70s, when we were transferred around, men went off to their jobs, kids went off to their school, and we were left to make our own lives. Mm-hmm. And that was a very important piece of my life, because it got me out in meeting people who are doing very worthwhile things, and it got you away from, well, when my kids were little, it got you away from the conversations of what your kids were eating and what they were doing and were they sleeping the night through and all that kind of stuff. And it broadened your into a brand new world.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And then you decided to go back to school for your master's degree.
I did. I had always wanted to be a social worker, and I guess following my mother's footsteps, she was a nurse, and I knew I couldn't deal with blood, so I knew I was never going to do that. But she too was very much of an activist, and I knew I wanted to be a social worker and be in the helping professions of some kind. Mm-hmm. At the time I was in school, there was no undergraduate program for social work, so. I majored in political science, thinking that at some point I would go back to school and get my MSW. We moved around. It was never convenient. There was never a program that was right in the same place that we lived. So it was a commuter kind of a thing of great distances, and it never was convenient. When we knew we were going to move to Chicago, I said I would like to do this first. Before I get involved in anything else, I would like to go back to school if I can get in, and do an MSW. And my wonderful family, I was willing to do it on a part-time basis. And my wonderful family said, no, just go do it 2 years. We can manage. They fortunately were of the age. I had a fourth grader and an eighth grader at that point, and they could come home and make their own peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunch.
And they did.
They did. And everybody pitched in and helped mom get through those 2 years of school. And that I will be forever grateful for their support.
Yeah.
Over and above, way above the call of duty.
How old were you at that time, Nancy?
Pardon?
How old were you?
How old was I? I started, I was 38, I was 40, I was 40 when I finished.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a mature student, and I wasn't even sure that I could sit in class for 60 minutes, and I'd been out of school for so long. I look back on that now, and I think, oh my, wasn't 40 young.
Right. Yes, yeah. And so you held jobs at both ends of the life cycle after that. What
I did when I got out of, when I first graduated, I did infant adoptions. I was direct manager of infant adoptions at a agency at Bensonville Home Society, and I did that for three and a half years. And I had a little interlude with administration and. With the most unlikely job of running the continuing education for the Certified Public Accountants Foundation. It was a very interesting job, but what it taught me was that I really needed to get back into social services. So at that point, I became director of St. Thomas Hospice in Hinsdale, and was there for 3 years, mm-hmm. and helped that agency go from an all volunteer hospice to a fully accredited Medicare and Medicaid certified hospital, hospice that was part of the Hinsdale hospital.
Yeah. Did you have a question, Catherine?
No, you asked the question that I was thinking about, that and everything seems to fit except the Certified Public Accountants Association.
People were aghast at that. On the other hand, I loved parts of that job. I worked downtown, and I loved that part of it. That was wonderful. But it was a real learning experience because it was out in the world, and it was a good running the continuing education. Ultimately, taught me a lot because again, the social workers were just at that point also becoming licensed in Illinois, and the accountants had just become licensed, and there was a whole issue of how you renew that, how you keep your certification, and all of that. So it was as crazy as it was. There were things that I learned that I could apply to the social work profession. We were in many ways as a profession in parallel with certification and that kind of thing. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about because you've had high level leadership roles. What about the direct service? Were you involved in direct service with the clients, or were you at the administrative?
No, I was when I did the adoptions, very much. I was doing case studies and placing children, and that was I never was in private practice. That was just a very new concept for social workers back when I started, mm-hmm. and that really wasn't my interest. One of the things that attracted me to social work was that it was such a broad field. Social workers could be in direct service in many, many venues, and also, you could be in private practice. You could be in policy. When I went on to the Illinois chapter of National Association of Social Workers, it's a very small association, and so I did a lot of things from membership to probably the best part of that job was that I was the director of the political PAC, which was separate but a part of, it was incorporated separately from the association, and we were involved in that was real campaigning to elect officers or to elect legislators at the state level. So became involved. It was during the period of both of the Clinton candidates for president and Carol Moseley Grand's candidacy as the first woman to be elected as senator from Illinois. So there was a lot of that political action that was going on at that point, and from there, as a result of my position there, again, a volunteer position, when I went on the board of the National PAC, and we had influence on the national level, and I was a trustee there for for 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
So that fulfilled my political junkie.
You've been very busy. Very busy. And then when you retired, you continued to participate in organizations.
Well, I think that in terms of social work, I think it was after I retired, or was when I was getting ready to retire, that I became involved with the group that was founding what was then Interfaith House. And that was a medical respite center for ill and injured homeless men and women who come from the hospital and have no place to go except back on the street to continue their healing. At that point, there were two other programs in the country, one in Boston and one in Washington. And the executive director of the Interfaith Council for the Homeless saw the need in Chicago for this kind of a service. And he gathered together a group of people. And I was not in that original group that met in the living room to get it started. But I did join shortly after that when we were writing grants to Robert. And the grant to Robert Wood Johnson was significant because it was a 3-year grant that was diminished, non-renewable, that really defined our program. And we were granted that that proposal was granted. And we then became the third medical respite program in the country. And we were making it up as we go along, as we went along. And so was everybody else, because every program was a bit different.
Yeah.
We have now been in existence. We've changed our name. We're the Boulevard. And we'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary next July.
Wow.
So it all goes to prove that there was a real need. We are still the only medical respite program within the city, but they are growing, and the governor has made this a priority. And there is finally a recognition this is a very necessary program to have in the continuum of care for homeless and in solving the homeless situation. So I feel very good about what I was able to do on a high level administration, back office, whatever, however you want to talk about the organization of and organizing of it. But I also have continued to volunteer. I am the garden lady and have been for probably 20 years. We have four raised vegetable beds, garden beds at the Boulevard. And in coordination with the food service at the Boulevard, we plant with the residents. We plant this garden every spring. And we just put it to bed last week. And grow all of the, not all of, but we supplement the food that we get from the Chicago Food Depository. We grow things that they don't usually give us, things like collards and cocktail tomatoes and some of the things we do duplicate. We grow great beans, pole beans and bush beans. We tried watermelon this year, and I would never do that again. It takes up loads and loads of space, and we never did get a really ripe watermelon. So I gave in to the residents on that one. When they wanted to grow watermelon, say, okay, we'll try it, but never again. But I have done a lot of direct interfacing one-on-one with the residents, not in a very official way, but just by volunteering and certainly being there at the beginning. I was almost a full-time volunteer in many ways. We all were, whatever needed to be done, we just pitched in and did it. And that the whole population of homeless and the whole issue of solving homelessness, I wish I had found when I was working, so I would have had more time to spend doing it. But I have met incredibly resilient people, people who have overcome all kinds of odds. We've had people who are, anything that would take you to the hospital would come to help. If you don't have a home to go to and you're back out on the street, we've had that. We've seen you. Seen it at Interfaith House. Imagine yourself having chemotherapy, coming to the Boulevard and living in a room with three other strangers, because this is a facility that was originally a nursing home built back in the 50s when you had wards and not private rooms. Walking in, not feeling good because you've just been released from the hospital, and yet making your way, and just that, and people have done amazing things. They've gone on from Boulevard to have their own businesses. They've gone on to be self-sufficient. They're just a group of terrific people. And I would like to share my aha moment, because when I first started, got involved, and then one of the first times that I went over to have lunch was one of the residents, it all of a sudden hit me. Without health insurance, I could be in one serious illness. I could be right there with them. And that was such an aha moment for me. You get to know people as sons and daughters of, they're like, the stereotypes disappear when you begin to meet people one-on-one and hear their stories. Probably my most rewarding volunteer experience.
Do you ever think about your own aging, Nancy?
Oh, all the time. Every time you get out of bed in the morning, how can you help but not realize that you're aging? I knock on wood, don't have any life-threatening conditions at this point. I do realize that I am aging. You just have to keep moving and keep your mind engaged and keep your body engaged. So yes, I do. And in ways, I guess, when you get to be, I don't know all either of your ages for sure, but I know you're over 70. So when you get beyond that, you look back and do a lot of looking back and saying how much things have changed, and some for the better and some for the, some not so good. Mm-hmm. I do think that women have made great strides in many, many ways. In my lifetime, and I hope to see that continue.
Yeah, well, that's a great note to end on. And thank you so much for all the service you have given and done. And it is what your life is all about. And so we really appreciate that. And thanks for being here today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Always a trailblazer.
Well, as long as I can do it, I would like to.
Yeah,
great to meet you.
And listeners, thank you for your loyalty. Because of you, our numbers are growing all across the country and overseas, and this is a good thing. But still, we need more subscribers and reviews on Apple Play and YouTube. So please support Women Over 70 and let your voice be heard, and help us change the conversation about women aging.